Military families are no strangers to change and upheaval. But what happens when you are tested by a complex medical diagnosis abroad?
Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care.
In this heartfelt episode, we sit down with Jamie and John McElroy, a resilient military family who share their deeply personal journey navigating cancer treatment across varied countries while managing relocation, military life, and their four children. This episode is a powerful reminder that resilience is a family effort and that hope can be found even in life's most unexpected crossroads. This story will inspire you to fight, adapt, and cherish every moment. Meet Jamie and John.
Hi, my name's Jamie. A little bit about me. I'm a military spouse, but I also work from home. I've worked from home for a while now, maybe four or some years. I have four kids, so I also stay at home and am able to be the stay-at-home figure as well as working. We had two corgis. We have one now. One passed away recently. That's pretty much about it, I think.
So, John, now it's your turn.
Okay. Hi, my name's John. I'm a military active duty, about to be at 20 years. Traditionally, I've been in logistics management for the majority of my time, but I've also done a little bit of like schoolhouse instructor, a plethora of different jobs that I was pretty fortunate to do. Married to my better half over here with our four kids and our dog. And we've just been in the San Antonio area for close to a year now.
So you've witnessed all the seasons of San Antonio life.
Yes, from July all the way through now.
Well, you can officially say that you're Texan now because you've survived a Texas summer. So there you go. I would love it if you could take a minute to kind of talk about what your service has looked like. I know you said that you are at the 20-year mark. I'm so grateful for your service. Thank you both. And I would love for you to share about what that life has looked like for your family in terms of like travel and relocating and tours, and then kind of what your life was like before you've had this diagnosis come into your family.
Yeah, I would say we've had an incredible time, challenging as many families go through, about two PCSs. So collectively, Utah, then to Japan, and then now here to San Antonio. So that in itself, of course, brings the challenges of the kids. I think in 4 years, they started a different school every year.
Oh, wow.
So that was a little tough on them, but definitely helped them be as resilient as they are now. So we prided ourselves in the fact that we kind of started to have some grassroots, and this is home. Within my career, I've traditionally been on the road a lot, unfortunately, where, of course, Jamie, working from home and being the constant figure for the family has been absolutely phenomenal. When we first got together, I was like, oh, I probably won't go anywhere. And then I think I was deployed like the next year. And then,
oh, no. Straight away.
Anniversary, we spent apart, unfortunately. And then, you know, unfortunately, missed birthdays and just a lot of significant events for both her and the kids. But we were in Japan when the initial diagnosis and everything started. So I think as we go through, that'll be kind of what we relate, because that itself had a lot of medical challenges. There's a lot of red tape that the U.S. medical construct has. So instead of being able to go down to Tokyo, you know, to get medical treatment, I had to fly all the way to Hawaii.
We're going to dive into a lot of that because those are unique specifics for sure. And Jamie, were you with John in Japan? Were you and the kids?
Yeah, we were there for 4 years.
Oh my gosh, that is incredible.
And before the diagnosis, that was a lot of our life out there, was traveling to other countries and being able to experience things that not many people would get to experience, especially them such a young age.
What age range do they fall in?
So we have three girls, one boy. So it's our 16-year-old daughter, 15-year-old daughter, 11-year-old son, and then 8-year-old daughter. So all our 8-year-old ever knew was Japan, you know, because we got there when she was about three.
Yeah.
That was her life was Japan.
Yeah, that was my question, was how many of your kids were born overseas or in the States? So it sounds like they were all born in the States, but then you quickly relocated after your last.
I feel Japan is more home because that was the longest we've been in one place.
Oh, absolutely. That's an incredible, unique experience that I feel like we're trying to highlight. So as you know, April is the month of the military child. And so with this podcast, what we're trying to show is essentially the unique living challenges and growth and incredible resiliency that military children hold in perfect days when it's not complicated by illness or injury or anything else. And then you throw in all these other things and it's just incredible to see how your kids have grown. And we'll share some about that and kind of for your family, what that's looked like. And hopefully somebody listening who's maybe a military family who might be having the same sort of illness or something similar in their family, they'll feel like they have that support they need to know that, hey, I'm not alone. Somebody else has gone through this as well. What I would love for you to do is kind of talking about, if you're comfortable, just kind of about the diagnosis and how that came about, what you were noticing, what led you to seek medical treatment, and then how that looked since you were overseas at the time.
The unfortunate funny thing, our car broke down the day before we found out everything. So we were coming back from family vacation about 3 hours away from where we live. Apparently, you need to put water in your radiator. Didn't know that. So we broke down about 40 minutes away from when we first started the 3 hour drive. And it was actually a fun event because we got to traverse Japan in a way we've never done before. Nothing was really a more rural town. So there was really not a lot of English speaking individuals. So anyway, we got home and her and I had, you know, an adult beverage and just kind of laughed about the day. And then the next day, I woke up with some personal medical complications that was very weird. And I was like, hey, something's not right. So we went over to our local ER. So they did a few tests. We initially thought we were looking at potentially kidney stones, just something minor and minute. And then doctor came back in the room and definitely had a look that was worrisome. So they identified there was a mass on my right kidney. And they were like, most likely it's cancerous. So, you know, we've got to talk to everybody. And this is probably about 5 or 6 in the morning on I think it was a Monday. I think we had just gotten everyone up. So the ER is like, we're going to make some calls. They reached out to a couple different locations for x-ray. And they were like, yep, that definitely looks like a tumor. And then by the end of the week, they had gotten me a doctor in Hawaii, in Tripler Army Medical Center, which is where everyone in the Pacific, to one of the challenges of living like Japan, Korea, things like that. Your closest U.S. full hospital is Hawaii.
Wow.
So the doctor there was like, yep, hey, you know, let's get him over here. We're going to get the kidney out. Everything looked like it was contained in the kidney, flew to Hawaii. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to join me then. Of course, you know, the kids still at school. They still had their lives going on. So fortunately, my parents are retired and they got pretty much a free trip to Hawaii on the military's dime. So they came to support after surgery. And then about a month later, you know, everyone said I was good. All the scans showed that I was, you know, okay, just missing a kidney. Came back home, fast forward a couple months, started having some pretty severe back pain. And it was one of those, I went into the ER a couple times and I was like, hey, like something's not right. They pretty much wrote it off predominantly as, oh, it's just, you know, after surgery, feeling of muscle, things like that. So finally, I wasn't able to actually walk. And then we went to the ER the last time. And then somebody finally had the right idea to, hey, we need to scan this guy and see what's going on. And by that time, actually, I had gone to stage 4, where it had already spread all throughout my bones. And the back pain was actually my vertebrae snapped because a tumor grew from September to December timeframe. Actually cracked my back to the point where I was no longer able to stand. And then at first we were like, oh, we did the surgery. We were good. We're all set. I came back and threw a party. She got me a shirt that says part of the One Kidney Club. And then unfortunately, things took a turn in December to where then I had to be medevaced out back to Hawaii. But before that, we actually fought to have my treatment stay in Japan because right, wrong, or indifferent, the folks in Hawaii had said I was good and, you know, everything was all peachy and rosy. And then just like that, I'm at stage 4. So like, where was the disconnect? What was missed?
Yeah.
I'll say we personally struggled with that because I have to follow orders. So I was told go to Hawaii and, you know, she was of the mindset of like, hey, they didn't do the job right the first time. Why are we going back there?
I just say like, we also had friends that were treated downtown in Tokyo and they were taking very good care of them. And so I think as I'm originally Italian, so I'm not too stranger going to off base and doing things. So I think if more of us were, you know, if you're having an issues and you're not getting the answers that you need, definitely like go off the base, go find, you know, they mostly all of the doctors in Japan speak English and they're willing to see like you and see patients. And we did get a chance to get him in, and we spent with the time in Hawaii on a medication that didn't work at all when we could have been like on the correct medication from the start. So it's really difficult, and it's just advocating for yourself and making sure that you are getting all your options. Fortunately, you know, with the military, you don't have too much to say as for them. But as a spouse, you have more, a little bit of freedom to go off and get some answers on your own.
Yeah, that is a lot, especially being in a foreign country. Even if they do speak English, I'm sure some of the processes and ways of doing things off base, hospitals in a foreign country are different. It's great that they had English speaking doctors everywhere. Did you feel like you were, when you went to the local ERs, do you feel like it was pretty standard practice as what you would see in the States, or were there things that were different?
We never went to the local ERs. All okay. The ERs were, it was urgent care. It was like military urgent care.
I could speak though, because I did spend a few days before I was medevaced back to Hawaii. And then actually before we even came here, I spent a week doing radiation in a local hospital with that same doctor who saw me in December, who had recommended the medication. The only struggles that were there is just, it's all TRICARE. So all the medical is, you know, paid for by the military. So that's why they had a vote of, you know, hey, this is where you're going to go to get your medical care. But to my wife's point, I think the harder thing is just people weren't willing to ask the question as to why I can't go to Tokyo. The friend she mentioned, good friends of ours, he had triple bypass surgery. He was a civilian in a military billet in Japan, but triple bypass surgery. He was treated well. He had some amazing food. He was even an advocate in my corner saying, hey, fight for yourself. Stay here, you know, local. They're going to take care of you. And even with just a little bit of the dialogue breakdowns, it was usually a team of four or five doctors, most of which spoke English. And, you know, we play the game of charades, like, what's your pain level? And I'm like, a lot. And they're like, okay, give them some more. They were phenomenal. And that's definitely something I would like to highlight, because we're kind of preordained to think that the military medicine is the only medicine. You know, we follow our orders. But to anyone who would be listening, I would say is, you know, number one, advocate for yourself. And if you're in another country, don't just think that, you know, Western medicine is the only medicine. Like, there are other opportunities. Because that took 5 months of me being away from my family because I was told to go to Hawaii.
That's why I was wondering how long it was. So if you're comfortable, what has your treatment looked like for your cancer?
So it started with nivolumab, ipi-nivo. So just
immunotherapy.
That's initially what started it. And that was once every 3 weeks, along with physical therapy, because, of course, I had to relearn to walk. I had a walker, and then eventually was able to go through physical therapy, kind of get myself back up to where I could walk again. And then now, being here in San Antonio, it's daily chemo, orally given. And then I still have immunotherapy once a month to kind of combat. But the good news is, while I blew past the immunotherapy at the beginning, it seems that the chemotherapy right now is, for the most part, keeping things stable.
That's great. So you haven't had any more metastases that you've seen, at least in your scans at this point?
Not since the chemo. We've seen a few before we got here. Part of the reason we chose San Antonio, too, was for MD Anderson down in Houston being one of the number one cancer centers in the world. And so as I kind of explained to my doctor there and my doctors here what was going on, they were like, hey, you're good. Like, we're going to get you on this medication. And things seem to be okay right now.
Now, in terms of like just kind of going back to the initial diagnosis, when you had to go to urgent care in the middle of the night in that crisis, like when you were in a medical event, from your kids, were they able to just stay home and you guys go in the night and come back? Or did you have to take them all with you? How did that look? I know here in the States, if I had to go to the hospital tomorrow and I have four kids, I could have a neighbor come stay with my kids. I just didn't know if you guys had that community already built or not yet.
I'd say we did, but we also were lucky enough to have two older children they did the babysitter course. They're CPR certified. They babysit around the community, so they could always watch our younger two and be at home. As far as getting them to like school and things like that, we did have friends that lived close by. I was also a key spouse out there. So for where he worked, and I met a lot of people and I made a lot of friends. So I had a lot of my Italian friends and my European friends that we used to get together. And, you know, one of them, her kids went to the same school on base. So she could pick up my daughter, and, you know, they loved her and things like that. So they really did help out.
That's so wonderful. I think that's one of the misconceptions that maybe civilians don't understand about military life. That the way that military families, especially when you're overseas, from what I've heard from other military families, just really there is this network of support in terms that maybe you don't find in normal neighborhoods across the United States. That military community is strong, and it is helpful that they just really lean on each other for support.
Yeah, I would say for me personally, that's always been, and I still struggle with it now, is asking for help. But, you know, when your back's broken and you can't move, it was amazing to see. I mean, I don't know how many people visit us in the hospital. When everything happened, we spent that Christmas away from our kids because...
Oh, so hard.
I was at a point where I told her, I was like, I can't go back there on my own. Like, I need you to be with me. And I know that was, you know, tough for her, myself as well. I didn't allow my kids to see me in the hospital before we left. I just didn't want them to, you know, see me in that condition. Of course, I called them, hey, I love you. You know, I'm going to be gone for a little while. And one thing, especially since my job had already taken me away, it was kind of a norm. They're just like, he's at work. Yeah.
We talk about that resiliency, right? Your kids had that resiliency of having dad, or in other families, maybe mom, separated because of their service. Mm-hmm. So it shows that your kids' experiences as being military children did help them with that separation, probably in a lot of ways.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Eve that we missed. So I think they had a lot more fun than they probably let on. A lot more fun than us.
I mean, we had to course correct a little bit when we got back. We're like, no, bedtime. Like, yeah. let's go. Yeah, to Jamie's point, it was amazing because through her work, her personality, and just who she is, and then the friends and the network that we had built, we had meal train for two, 3 weeks. They were feeding them all there. And then we also had meal trains from people I've worked with in Hawaii. So, like, you know, we had more food than we needed, but just the fact that people were willing to take one stressor off of our plate while we were dealing with what we had, it was phenomenal.
My European friends, before we left, they came over and they wrapped all the gifts for me so I could tie up loose ends. So they were just there, just wrapping all my kids' gifts and helping me put them away. And we're really just like things that you don't think that you would worry about, but you still want like the kids to have some sort of consistency and things like that, really came out. And they're just so helpful to do that.
I love the community you've built. It sounds like it's very multifaceted. It's other military families, it's past relationships, it's your European community. I feel like you've done a great job of building this big network of love around your family. I feel like some people who are in illness, they struggle with that, letting people in. And I love that you guys have done that. I think that shows great strength and resiliency in yourself as well. I would love for you to talk about your connection with Wonders and Worries and how you became connected. I assume it was when you became to San Antonio. Is that correct? Yeah. And worked with Lori. But just kind of what were some of those initial concerns that you had? How do you feel like you felt prepared to have the conversations with your kids that you needed to have about your illness?
Yeah, I'll say, so we found out about Wonders and Worries actually through my therapist here in one of the hospitals. Because, of course, when everything started for me, I was like, hey, I got to talk to somebody. And I learned a lot about myself through some of that therapy. For the longer haul, when she was back home with the kids, my parents were there, predominantly mostly my mom. And one of the toughest things was, you know, no one would allow me to say it's okay to not be okay. So when I was having really bad days, I would call her and, you know, she would just listen and let me vent. But of course, my mom, you know, as most parents are, oh, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And I think after probably the fourth or fifth time I snapped at her, she realized, hey, I'm saying the wrong things. I learned that I was like, or at the time, I didn't know how to deal with myself and what was happening to me. So I couldn't be a good advocate to my family. But when I heard about Wonders and Worries, again, I was gone. So it was kind of business as normal. Like, hey, you know, dad's out. It is what it is. They heard a few nights, you know, I'd call her just from tears, whether it be pain or just kind of going through things. I know they had their friends, but we never really had the tough conversations. So what I loved about Wonders and Worry, and I'll shout out Lori specifically, her and the team, they opened that gate to allow us to understand that it's okay to talk about this.
Absolutely.
Especially with the medication I was on, I had a lot of side effects, different than what I had in Hawaii, to where like my walking slowed down, like I had pain in my feet, I'm, you know, tired, I'm a little more irritable, I'm losing. Loves loose swings.
I like how Jamie's like, let me weigh in. Let me tell you.
No, because of course I'm the one dealing with the physical aspect a little bit, but the mental is all of us. So after every session, I loved it because, you know, especially the younger kids, they were like, you know, they had the doll or our youngest, she had her doll and she's like, look, this line on your back is like where you had surgery. And I was like, yeah. I was like, do you know what that was? And she's like, oh yeah. And like, it just, it allowed us to normalize an unfortunate and chaotic situation. And I think after even our older girls, they just had a safe space to talk. And now, you know, I still work on it because it's a personal thing with me too. But now it's like, hey, you know, I went to the doctor, everything's looking good right now. And everyone, we smile, we celebrate the small victories. It's a marathon, not a sprint. There are good days, there are bad days. And I think we just have better outlets.
Well, and I love that you kind of came at it from the approach of, I need to get some therapeutic support for me. I need to find some resources for my kids. Jamie, do you feel like you've had support for you? Like, have you had people to talk to as well?
Haven't gone to anyone else to talk about it. I've talked to my friends my parent as well. And I talked to him about it, but I haven't gone as far as like going to get support. I know the resources are there. So if I know if I got to that point, would be able and get something. Yeah.
And it sounds like y'all have a strong pulse in communication, and that's huge, right? Like right there is even being apart so much, you guys probably had to really up your communication game to be able to kind of keep an eye on how each other is doing. And so it's nice that you have that established foundation already of talking, especially I feel like that's unique to the military family in that you do go through long gaps apart. So your strength in communication is probably much stronger than what maybe a civilian family would be having in their everyday life relationships.
Yeah.
Were there any moments in terms of your children that kind of surprised you with their understanding or maybe some tools for your family that really stood out as being exceptionally helpful with explaining illness or communication or anything like that?
One of the things that stood out is we were supposed to go to Korea. And that was our next station after Japan, which we were all very excited about, especially our 15-year-old. She's all about K-pop.
Of course. How could you not be? Yes.
So we visited, but we were so excited to get to experience living there. And I think as soon as everything happened, even though the disappointment's there for everyone, like having to come back to the U.S. when you want to stay overseas and experience more and travel more, I think despite everybody's disappointment, they were so willing to do it. We haven't heard very many complaints, even like coming here and there, you'll hear something. But sure. I think it's just important to know that even kids, if they're resilient and military makes them resilient, it doesn't take away their feelings. And I think giving them that space to be able to express that and not be upset that they are upset helps a lot. So I think even like going to the therapy and understanding things more probably help even allow them to express like, okay, yeah, I was a little upset coming here, but I have a bigger understanding of why we are here.
And I love that Wonders and Worries was connected with you at your last stop for right now, because then it really let the kids have a chance to share their story. It sounds like your kids are very flexible, because I know I have 4 kids. They protest a lot. And they're a very similar age range. I know that life, and I know that big families carry their unique fun flavors of life. And so I imagine that it's just getting everyone on solid ground and feeling that everyone is kind of a part of the plan, which it sounds like you're doing. Looking back on everything you've had so far, between all the military experience to traveling to medical treatments, how do you feel like this has shaped your family, this experience?
I think kind of to your point, we've been pretty resilient, and I think it made us even more so. So on top of all this, I know Jamie had mentioned it. So we had 2 dogs. So from the span of when I got back in April, Japan. So I got back in April and they said, hey, we want your family to PCS in May. And so we were like, no, we're not, because the school year didn't even end until June. And we put up a fight, her more so than I, just because she can. And we just kind of explained to my leadership team, we're like, listen, like our family has been through a lot in a couple months, more so than some families have over a span of years. So we were fortunate to where we got to the end of the school year. We wanted them to have just that sense of normalcy. Again, we were mentioning like they didn't start and stop schools at all at the same time. And then a few days before we were leaving, doing the health screening, we found out that our dog, he was physically not going to be able to make the flight. So that was another decision that we had to make. And then we move here. We're fortunate to purchase a home, but you know, home's not ready. So now we're doing hotel living for 30 days. And I think it had its fun. You know, they got to eat all their Chick-fil-A and all the US stuff that they haven't had in years. But I say all that to say is that, you know, we went through loss. We went through this diagnosis. We went through a PCS that even in the best of times is always stressful because you're losing all your things. We went from being apart to kind of having to do a little bit family, like reintegrating with each other. Like, you know, I come back and they're like, I forgot he doesn't like that. We do X, Y, or Z, or myself included. I think all of that has now given us to where we have some dinners and it's a little bit of a laugh, but it's also a remembrance. So we have a beautiful area designated to our former family member. And we open up now, I think a little bit more where we're comfortable saying those things of like, hey, I miss him today. Like I miss him too. You know, I really wish we had gone to Korea. We were watching some Japanese food videos last night and we were reminiscing of like, I remember this and da, da, da. And it's really just putting our best foot forward and making the most out of what we have now.
Jamie, good on you for fighting for that end of the school year. I'm impressed at your advocacy too, because I know it's hard to be the spouse of someone in the military because, right, they have to follow orders, but you're lumped into that as well. And so being able to say, wait, can we give a little pushback on this? That's brave. And that's great advocacy. That at least worked out. I'm glad.
Yeah, I think definitely just keeping in mind that you still have the willing and the power to really advocate for yourself. It doesn't matter where or who it's with. Don't be afraid to reach out and talk to who you need to talk to make sure that your family's okay. At the end of the day, like that's who matters most. So the military, love what everything they do for us, but also at the end of the day, when you're out and things like that, like your life continues on. So just keep in mind that even though we give our life and they give their lives to the service and things like that, that at the end of the day, your family is what's going to be there. So just make sure that you're not afraid to fight for them.
John, are you able now to still be able to working while you're doing your treatment? Or are you on a medical leave? How does that look with the military?
Yeah, so I'm assigned to a patient squadron. So in my record, it shows I'm a patient. It says patient, prisoner, and student pipeline. I was like, no, I'm a patient, guys. I swear. actually last week I started working for my primary job in logistics with a local organization here. For the majority of the time, though, my number one job was to be a patient. So to go to my appointments, you know, take my medication. And while I was dealing with the side effects, I wasn't able to at that time. But through fantastic support from both my medical side and my leadership here. So I telework now. So I'm still able to contribute. August will be my official 20-year mark. Wow. So I'm getting to finish my story kind of the way I want to, where I'm not just getting shoved out the door. And I'll just kind of echo one other thing that Jamie just mentioned is we do, again, we become ingrained and, you know, we drink the Kool-Aid of like, all right, this is what I've got to do. But I would say it from the military member's perspective is it's the family gets a vote. Even Korea, because our oldest, she would have ultimately graduated from high school. I brought them to the table when I was like, hey, we're thinking about going to Korea. And I was like, it's probably going to be 4 years. And they're like, oh, why 4 years? And I was like, well, you're going to graduate and then your sister's going to graduate. So I think they finally understood that, like, you know, I'm not just dragging them around the world. Like, we're actually making like decisions because we want you to have as much normalcy as we can.
During the month of the military child, how can our listeners best support military families from your perspective, maybe kind of navigating a similar family situation? Like what would be helpful for you?
I would say early and often communication. Not that I think we in any way did anything wrong, but now, especially having missed so much time, fortunately the span wasn't any birthdays, you know, but Valentine's Day, you know, like things that were important to like our kids that I couldn't be there for is just that communication with them, which we did. Hey, you know, I can't be there for St. Patty's Day. Ironically, is our daughter's birthday.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I was like, actually, I missed that one birthday. But then we found like we brought them, I brought the family out for spring break. So to Hawaii, because I figured if I'm going to be here. And so we spent our youngest, her 7th birthday together. And it's really just valuing the time that you had. I would say I was a workaholic, probably still am now, to where a lot of times I would do things to help the betterment of our career and stuff, but it would take me away from the family. And so now I look at that as like not opportunities or things that I regret, but I'm like, man, I really wish I could have been there a little bit more, especially because we don't know how the diagnosis will, you know, potentially continue to progress. So I try to take everything just as it's a great day just to be. Like now I do the drop-offs at school. And you can ask my kids, they may or may not enjoy it. But you know, I drive them there, I pick them up. I get to do that. Like I just get to spend those extra 10 minutes with them, you know, before they run off to their tablets and stuff like that. But it's amazing.
What makes your family unique is you're still in the military. You don't know what your future holds in the military. It could be another deployment down the road. It could be another move at some point. Who knows, right? What does hopefulness look like for you specifically? Because you are still living with this disease and you still are going through active treatment. So what is something that gives your family hope?
I'll be honest and say it's her. It's what I've seen her do that I probably have not given enough credit for. I think the strength I've seen from her to navigate my mood swings and my illness and all the things that I'm going through and still wake up every morning and pack our kids' lunch and still be there to sew our daughter's, you know, dance outfits while she's on top of that working a job that takes her entire evening and afternoon. Oh, by the way, then she's cooking dinner. Like now she's, so my hope is I've got to be around longer so that way she can get some time to relax. Like she can enjoy and we can continue to make memories because that's, I think that's what we've prided ourselves on.
Always live as, you know, it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to happen regardless. So you could either spend your time being angry, sad, upset, or you can just make the most of it now and continue to kind of figure out life as the days go by. Because at the end of the day, you just don't know. I mean, he might have the terminal illness and something terrible to me happens tomorrow. So you really just have to like take the news and still live your life. So I think that's how I just view things, you know, just being honest and open. And you know, if one day you're sad and you want to cry about it, do it, please, because you obviously need that. But then the next day, you know, you get up and maybe you plan something that's going to make those memories.
Maybe this isn't where you wanted to be or how you wanted to be, but you're finding your own ways to make your own family story here. And it's admirable. Yeah.
It's making memories and again, making the most of it.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.